Up all people, regardless of who they are, June the 29th on Pennsylvania and 3rd.
Thank you to the following for providing food for our phone volunteers during our spring membership drive. Sabu Hakim, Vicino's Restaurant Italiano, Crown Caribbean Bakery, Lamont's Entertainment Complex. Thank you for supporting WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Turn it around.
If we all could love one another, all the world could be as one. Just take time to love one another, all the world could be as one. Black man, white man, standing together, no more fighting to be done. Yellow, red man, dancing together, all the world could be as one.
And good morning. Welcome to Heal DC. This is Joni. Today is June 17th, 2 days away from June 19th, and it is 2024. We're going to be spending the hour focusing on Juneteenth. We're very honored and pleased to have our special guest, Mr. C.R. Gibbs, who is many call him the godfather of D.C. Black history, and he will be joining us in just one moment. We're also later in the show, a little into the first half hour, we'll be joined by Frank Smith with African American Civil War Museum, who has some important comments as well. But we first want to start with our, we have an imaginary drum roll here on Two Heel DC, and we're giving one to our own Chuck Hicks. Chuck Hicks has been organizing the DC Black Fathers Motorcade for, is this the fifth year, Chuck?
Yes,
fifth year. And I'll just say, and Chuck can briefly jump in, this year was Saturday, and Chuck tells, well, he'll tell you how many cars went through the city, and I was glad to be amongst them. And I will tell you, it is so inspiring to be in those line of cars where people cheering on the side as they see the cars with the posters in the window celebrating and honoring Black fathers. So I really want to thank Chuck Hicks, because he comes from a family of organizers, and his father is also a hero, founder of the Deacons for Defense in local Bogalusa, Louisiana. But his organizing skills and commitment are ever apparent, especially at this event. So, Chuck, just give us a word about what you were proud of on Saturday.
I am always proud that people show up to say something good about Black men or Black fathers, Black boys, Black uncles, cousins, and that not only Black men, but Black women show up also to say that they think Black men are important, not just Black men saluting themselves, but everybody saluting Black men. And as you said, Joni, as we go through the neighborhood, it's just absolutely inspiring to hear, to see those people come out and get those signs and shake them and raise their fists and smile. It is a joy. We had approximately 40 cars in the motorcade, and it was a wonderful trip. Thanks to Stuart Anderson and Myra and a whole bunch of Michael Benzan and Dennis and Joni and a whole bunch of people who make it happen. It's not just me. It's all the people who believe in the same things that I believe in terms of making something happen for the people. That's it.
Absolutely. And of course, the ancestors were there as well. I know, Chuck, your dad's spirit was definitely there, very much so, and many other spirits of fathers. We'd also like to extend our prayers and love and good wishes to those people who have lost their dads this year. We have a few of our folks here at WPFW who lost their fathers recently, including our own Magic Mike, the engineer, lost his dad a couple of months ago. And those fathers who lost their children for various reasons, including gun violence. So we send our prayers to all of you. And again, we thank Chuck for his that very inspirational gathering event on Saturday. So we're going to jump right into talking with our own very special, important Mr. C.R. Gibbs, author of at least six books and much, much more, who's going to shed some light on the history of Juneteenth. And what are some of the things that are important for us to think about and know that we may not hear on Wednesday? So good morning, Mr. Gibbs.
Good morning. Good morning, Joni.
It's good to see you here. So tell us, you know, it's always hard to know. Some people know history, some people don't. But take us from where you'd like to start with the origins of Juneteenth. We used to have a Harry Jones on here who had his own interpretation about what was important. But you tell us the history of Juneteenth and why it is important for us today.
The coming of freedom to the largest state in the Union is a significant historical event and one that should be commemorated. But I do want to begin with a sense of what it was like, the attitudes that governed the lives of 200,000 black folk. And it's interesting, if we look at the census for Texas for the year 1860, we see 182,000 and change. But we know that the population of enslaved people grew in Texas, because that was the last place in the U.S. where many slaveholders were bringing their enslaved people. I've often told the story of a man named Perry Downs. For those of you who may be unfamiliar with Perry Downs, the way that May Holland, Frederick May Holland, actually, she was a female author, tells the story is that she says, Perry said when he was in Texas, when emancipation was proclaimed, it overheard his master say he had run his property into Texas and then he could run it into Cuba. Then Perry said that he knew something was wrong about his master and he made up his mind never to go on water with his master. And again, this is from Frederick Douglass, the colored orator, by Frederick May Holland. What this tells us, and what I sometimes wonder if we have an understanding of how resolute the slave owners were to keep us in slavery. When I say that Texas was the last great frontier of slavery in the United States, it was planned to be that way. It was planned to be that way. With some 268,000 square miles, the slave owners envisioned waves and waves of cotton and platoons of black folks on each row picking that cotton. They did not ever wish to give that lifestyle up. No matter what you may hear about, well, everybody thought it was going to die out anyway. No, they intended to keep that going for years. And an example of that is the Declaration of Causes. Each Southern state filed one. And if you look at the one for Texas, it makes clear that black enslavement, black inferiority were the guide stones, if you will, of a state that sought and would do everything in its power to keep us enslaved forever. There wasn't any, we'll do this for 5 years or 10 years or something like that. In fact, so dedicated were they to the idea of enslavement and all that came along with it. And I'm talking about black servitude, black inferiority, as far as they were concerned, and under any discussion of freedom would lead almost to a panic. Let me give you one example. Speaking of panics, when cotton prices went low and some people began to talk about, well, maybe we need to get off of this crutch of cotton that we're on. A 60-year-old preacher, he was a Democrat who was born in Kentucky and who decided that whatever the Bible may have sanctioned slavery, but he criticized the flogging of black folk in a sermon. His parishioners in Texas tied him to a post and almost killed him. Now, that's the preacher, that's the pastor over this particular congregation. And yet it shows you how wedded these people were to enslavement. So they were not going to give up easily. They were not going to give up easily. One expert talks about how in Texas, the assessed value of all enslaved people was $1,106,688.920, 20% more than the assessed value of all cultivated land in the state. There were only two factories, according to some sources, in the entire state of Texas. One made hats and the other clothing, both employed enslaved labor. And on top of that, and at the same time, as crazy as that may sound, they now tended to blame their troubles on the slave people. As one observer said, the hatred of Negroes above the falls of the Brazos and Colorado was a flaming thing. And I mentioned to you about how the slave population grew during the Civil War, which is why we go from 182,000 in 1860 to over 200,000 in just 5 years. Mm. It is believed that the total slave population increased by 35% in Texas during the war. So this is what freedom-seeking black folk were facing in a state that, in fact, did not tolerate the continued residence of freed blacks within their borders.
Yes, and Mr. Gibbs, I'd just like to remind listeners, Gerald Horn is a frequent guest here on this show, and as well as on Esther Verum's show and throughout the network, and he had a wonderful book that was released, I think, 2 years ago, The Counter-Revolution of 1836, Texas and the Roots of American Fascism. And I think it's important for us, as CR is talking about Texas, to remember that Texas was not, we took, Texas was a part of Mexico. It was not part of this country. So Texas has a long history, as CR just explained, of being leading in some of these horrific things such as slavery, and is still to this day leading us closer into fascism. So I just wanted to remind people that Texas was not, that we took Texas from Mexico and was not originally part of the United States, as my father taught me when I was a child.
Yes, so. It's crazy when you look at the kinds of stratagems they used. Texas came into the United States as already a fully fledged member. They sent ambassadors to Washington, D.C. And from the beginning, the fix was already in. The fix was already in. It wasn't going to be. Yes, there was substantive resistance. One famous statement about Texas coming into the Union was that it was simply a bigger pen to cram more slaves in. The anti-annexation movement, Frederick Douglass spoke out against that. Most everyone understood that the coming of Texas into the United States was a victory for the slave power. And we know how fully invested Texas was, because anytime you have the inclination to drive up to Gettysburg, there is a monument to Texas troops at Gettysburg. Mm. You have to understand. If you don't understand how wedded these people were to slavery, you won't understand the magnificence of our fight, understand the character of our resistance as we look at the size of the opposition to Black freedom. That is critical. And so when Dr. Horn talks about the fascism, yeah, we're talking about, and there are still many people who aren't ready to call these so-called plantation slave labor camps. But that is, in fact, what they were. And we have to begin to tear the truth away from the fiction and know in our heart of hearts the kinds of lives that enslaved people in Texas had to go through. This is why they held freedom so close. This is why there was no substitute. Not that the government of Texas was inclined to offer any, but again, the darkness of perpetual slavery and subjugation. And so when we understand that, then we get a sense of why did they celebrate so hard? And they made it, you know, the racists, the Jim Crow people, even after the war, still made it difficult with a host of laws. And I hope you won't mind, Joni. I'm going to talk tomorrow night, I believe it is, at the Woodridge Library.
Yes, I was going to ask you that. 6 p.m. tomorrow. And this is a free event, and everybody, it would be a positive thing to come out and hear Mr. Horn. I'm sorry. I'm trying to think of too many things at once here. So tell us what's happening tomorrow evening, Tuesday, at the library.
At 6 o'clock tomorrow night, June 18th, I will be doing a presentation. Yes, it's on Juneteenth, but it's from a different historical perspective. I want to answer a simple question. What did Black folk do the day after Juneteenth and the succeeding months and years? What was it like? And so I'm doing a presentation called Juneteenth, the Next Frontier. I want you to listeners to, again, understand it was a continual fight. And when there were Juneteenth celebrations, they were acts of resistance against a state government and local governments across from El Paso, you know, to the Texas Panhandle, so that you know the size of the courage and the size of the commitment that Black men and women put in the state that was constantly trying to Jim Crow them even further into the maw of racial segregation. And once you see that, then maybe you'll understand. And I'll also explain, as I'm sure Joni will let me do, what connection it is to the steps toward freedom that started actually here with DC emancipation and come to us all the way down the historical corridor to today.
Absolutely. So let's make it clear that what's happening is tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the Woodridge Library. I don't know if you have that address in front of you, CR.
The easiest way to remember it is 18th and Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. That's 18th and Rhode Island Avenue Northeast.
Okay, and that is tomorrow, Tuesday. Mr. C.R. Gibbs will be speaking at the library from 6 to 8 p.m. Juneteenth, the Next Frontier. That is such a fabulous title, because it isn't just in the past that we're talking about these issues. It's right now in the present and into the future that we need to be thinking about what are those lessons there from Texas. So continue on, Mr. Gibbs, about what we should be thinking about today.
It is clear that we don't fully appreciate, I think, that again, the size of the opposition, and we have to do that. And I'm not prepared, and the ancestors, I don't think, were to put it in terms of, well, we won't take it unless we get A, B, C, and D. Our ancestors understood that by whatever means we got freedom, if it said so on a piece of paper, we were going to shove it into reality. We were going to take it. And this would require, particularly in Texas, that we get on a war footing. You can say, well, what happened? And this is, for us, a further consideration of the difficulty of slavery. It did not end because Juneteenth came along. For those of you who don't believe that, I would encourage you to take your phone out and look at the abolition of slavery, the date of the abolition of slavery in Kentucky. I would take you, if you're willing to take the chance, to go further and take a look at how Delaware became free. And we ain't even going to go into the tricks that were used in the state of New Jersey to have a paper freedom that was nothing in reality when they signed it, and they knew the people. Yeah, that high up in the North. So the freedom for Black people in this country is a complicated step-by-step, place-by-place process. And so I'm suggesting to you that if we see what happened that brought the end of enslavement in the largest state in the country, we can get a sense of the scope of what faced us and the magnificence of the glorious day that June 19th came to be. We know, for example, that there is a slave narrative written by a man who had been enslaved under what you might call one of the founders of the modern state of Texas, and that's Sam Houston. And one of his enslaved people wrote about Juneteenth and compared it. He said it was like the 4th of July, but this was for Black people. And understand that if we go back and look at the process of freedom in this country, it was a mixed bag, not only now, some would say, but as well as back then. When Sam Houston took the advantage of what's called the preliminary emancipation in September of 1862, it was, in fact, for the enslaved people that had formerly labored for him, a way to understand how close you were to freedom and how far away. Because having that piece of paper, having to move about under the preliminary emancipation, which also announced that something even bigger was coming to the nation on January the 1st, a few months down the road, 1863, the fact that you could not leave the plantation in Texas and not run afoul of the law, thinking that you were off the plantation illegally, even though you had a piece of paper. So something had to be done. Texas was not going to voluntarily even go along with the laws of the United States, which is why if you read General Order Number 3, which is the, if you will, the Juneteenth Charter or Statement, it says that the people are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free. Now, that's referring to the state of Texas. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor. The freedmen are advised to remain at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts, and they will not be supported in idleness either there or elsewhere. But even to make this ironic statement, Union General Gordon Granger, who was the commander of the Union forces that landed at Galveston, had to bring regiments with him. And I believe that Frank Smith will talk about that in a bit. But they didn't and were not willing to simply accede to something signed in Washington, D.C. This is why, to stretch that connection, Gordon Granger clearly references, quote, a proclamation from the executive of the United States that all slaves are free. He is referring to the Emancipation Proclamation. That's what he's referring to. But as you can imagine, people wedded to enslavement were not going to go along with something that was said in what many considered the Yankee capital. So Union forces had to be brought to Galveston. It was the center of resistance, as would the joy be when the Gordon Granger stood on the balcony of the Osterman building at 22nd and Strand and made the announcement that I just read to you. So when we come to grips with a more in-depth history of Juneteenth, then we understand the risks. What if that operation had failed? We understand the courage, because there were black men under the command of Gordon Granger who made it the racist and slave owners' worst nightmare to see black men in uniform. Mm. And they were sent out to enforce it. And this is yet another reason why we pay attention to the struggle among freedom, justice, and equality as it took place in the state of Texas.
Yes, you're listening to C.R. Gibbs. Many of us call him the I'm sorry, folks. He is a very important person in this city, a very important scholar and activist around Black History more. And he's talking about Juneteenth in the past and in the present. And again, you can hear him tomorrow live and in person at the Woodridge Library. The theme tomorrow will be Juneteenth, the Next Frontier. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Frank Smith. I also want to welcome on listening with us is Jeremiah Lowry, he's worked with Two Heel DC over the years, but he's also joining us again these days to be with us and help us grow and help do outreach to young people. And Jeremiah, if you have a question for Mr. Gibbs or a comment, you can jump in. If not, I'll keep talking.
No, I don't have a comment right now, but let me just say I really appreciate you, Mr. Gibbs. And if I do have a comment, Joni, you know I'll definitely jump in.
Okay. And again, I want to clearly state the name of the book of Gerald Horn is The Counter-Revolution of 1836, Texas Slavery and Jim Crow and the Roots of U.S. Fascism. And I think that that book, a lot of the points that is made in that 600-plus page book, actually, Mr. Gibbs is going to talk about related topics as he speaks about Juneteenth, the next frontier, which sounds to me like he's going to discuss what we still need to do to really, of course, achieve freedom for black people and for all people in this country of ours. We still have a long way to go. Perhaps the engineer could call Frank Smith if he's not on with us now. Oh, very good. Frank, welcome. Frank Smith is the founder of the African American Civil War Museum, was the city council person in Ward 1 for many years, comes from Georgia, and is a veteran of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Welcome, Frank. I guess if you need to unmute yourself, and Frank is in the process of many things, including expanding the museum there on near 10th and U Street, and hopefully by the end of the year you will be invited, or sometime soon, to the newly expanded museum. And he's also going to tell us some things about SNCC. But Frank, are you with us?
Wait a minute, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, very good.
Are we good?
We're great. So,
okay.
So first of all, tell us what you'd like to share about Juneteenth and how it relates to the work that you do with the African American Civil War Museum.
Okay. Well, you know, like everybody else in America, I'm getting used to the national Juneteenth holiday. This is, I think, our third or fourth year, so we're still sort of working out how we celebrate it. And one of the things that the African American Civil War Museum is trying to add to the discussion is the fact that when Granger shows up in Galveston on that day in June, and they call it Juneteenth because they don't know whether it was the 13th, 14th, 15th, or the 19th. It was one of those days. It actually took several days for these ships to land because the weather was bad and the tide was low. And so all those things went into taking them a while to get in there. But they finally landed there for sure with about four regiments of African-American soldiers on these ships, several ships that had sailed down there from Virginia, part of the 25th Army Corps. So what we do is we lift up the names of those soldiers. We have them all on our wall here at the African-American Civil War Memorial. Among the 200,000 names that we have are those four regiments, which is a very interesting story. One of those regiments was raised in Chicago, had been here in Washington, D.C., not in Washington, but in Richmond, Virginia, fighting Robert E. Lee before they shipped him down there. One of them had been, actually the 26th, had actually been in Appomattox. So these were seasoned black troops that were tired and hungry and ready to go home. But they had one more battle to fight before they could get up out of here. So they went down there with the 25th Army Corps. And it's possible that I'm sure these people down there must have heard about freedom and about, because I heard some of the discussion that C.R. Gibbs was giving earlier about these, about the population of enslaved people growing during the war. One of the reasons why it was growing was because these slave owners were moving their slaves further and further west, trying to escape the Union Army, because they knew wherever the Union Army showed up, people were running away to join the Army and running away to set up these conscription camps. So they were moving them further and further west. So some of them were newly, people who had been brought from places like Louisiana and Mississippi and others. So they may have heard about freedom. I'm sure they did before Juneteenth. But boy, freedom meant something very different when about 4,000 or 5,000 black soldiers show up down there, as Douglas would say, with bullets in their pockets and rifles on their shoulders and U.S. on their lapel. They were battle ready. They'd been in several of these fights already, and they were ready for the. And they knew the Union knew that there were some Confederates down there too, who were still trying to help maintain slavery and who were going in and out of Mexico. Across the border back and forth, making raids on these Union facilities and stuff like that. So they sent the good troops down there to straighten this thing out. So we read those names aloud. I want the public to know these names. Our contribution is going to be that we're going to read the names of those soldiers aloud at the monument on Juneteenth. And we're going to do this every year on June 19th at 11 a.m., it's about 8,000 or 10,000 names. We get the more people we get out here, the quicker it'll take us to do it. So if you're looking for something to do on Juneteenth and you live within the sound of our voice here on WPFW, come out at 10 o'clock in the morning to the African American Civil War Memorial. We'll give you a sheet of paper with a bunch of names on it. We're gonna read them all out loud. We've got about 40-50 people already signed up. We need more, so come and join us.
And it's a very inspiring event. And in a few moments, Thomas Blanton's going to jump in and tell us what are some other very special things, of course, happening on Wednesday. But before we move into this Wednesday, Frank Smith is also going to share with us that this coming June 21st, I think it is, which is maybe that's Friday or Saturday.
Right.
Is the 60th anniversary of the killing of the three young men down there in Mississippi. But, Frank, you tell us from your perspective, tell us what is happening this weekend. And, of course, you are among the veterans of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And, of course, Marion Barry was sent here to come to D.C. to organize for statehood. He was a member of SNCC, and the rest is history with regards to Marion Barry. Just shows what a impact SNCC has had on this city, often unknown and forgotten by many. But tell us, yeah. Frank, and of course, we are lifting up our own Dory Ladner this month and always. Her birthday is coming up on June 28th, also a SNCC activist and very much a part of the PFW family who left us physically but is still with us, of course, always. So, Frank, tell us what is you're going to Mississippi this weekend.
Yeah, on Thursday, Wednesday, I'll be reading Juneteenth at the African American Civil War Memorial. On Thursday, I'll be taking Southwest Airlines. I always fly Southwest. I fly first class all the time, Southwest. And for those of you who don't understand the levity of what I'm talking about, there's only one class on Southwest. I say it's all first class. Some people say it's all second class. And so I'll be going down there because we're having in Indianola, Mississippi, a celebration for the summer of 1964, which starts out, as you say, John, tragically, with the death of three civil rights workers, Swarner, Goodman, and Cheney. And let me just remind the audience that Swarner and Goodman were white. Cheney was black. And I often tell people that we got the names of 200,000 soldiers on our wall at the African-American Civil War Memorial. 7,800 of them are white officers who led these guys in the battle. And in those days, like Robert Gould Shaw, these white officers led from out front. That's why when you see that movie Glory, Shaw is one of the first people to go over that parapet. That's why he gets shot first, because the Confederates knew if they could shoot these white officers, that the next people in line they thought were lesser officers, black people, who would have to take over for them. And of course, some of them took over, like and led these regiments big time in these battles. But so we're going to go down there to celebrate the summer of 1964, the summer when we started something called Freedom Schools, that were mostly designed to teach people how to read section of the Mississippi Constitution so they could interpret it to the satisfaction of a voter registrar officer, so they could get registered to vote. Now, of course, you know, they didn't register any of these people to vote. They didn't let anybody register. You can only register one day a week on Thursdays from 8 a.m. to 12 o'clock, and they only let two people in the courthouse at a time. So we marched all these people down in these long lines, 200-300 people. We used to stand outside singing freedom songs while everybody else was inside at the courthouse trying to register, none of which were allowed to register. So we started these freedom schools, and now these freedom schools have morphed into other schools in Mississippi. And one of the things that interests me is the New York Times recently reported that Mississippi had the highest jump in test scores for its elementary schools, any schools in the country. And so finally some good news come out of there. I'm going down there to see if freedom schools had anything to do with this great jump in the test scores, because you know, we have an arrangement with the D.C. school system to move our D.C. students through the African-American Civil War Museum so they can see some of these accomplishments that we made during those times, maybe, you know, to help hopefully influence them to help to live a better life, to stay away from this violence, stay in school, try to find a place for themselves in the country. We know it's tough, but we've got to find a way to make it better here. And so I'm going down there to be reunited with some of my civil rights friends, but also to see if we can find some little nuggets that might help us with our struggle here in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. And for those younger folks who might not know about the murder of Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner, that'll be 60 years ago this weekend. Just in one or two sentences, tell the young folks what happened.
So here's a day back in 1963. We start by organizing for the summer of 64. We start organizing the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party in Mississippi so we could go to the convention in 64. But in order to get there, we plan to bring down conventions in August. So in June and July, we're going to bring down to Mississippi about 1,000 young people, 80% of which are white, by the way, that have been working with us all along as friends of SNCC. They have been organizing on their college campuses, raising money for us, sending food and stuff down there. So when people got evicted from these plantations, they'd have something to eat. They wouldn't starve to death like these people in Gaza are doing now. So we're working hard trying to get these people to realize the North and the Democratic Party to realize that our people, black people in Mississippi, are not participating in the process, because they don't want to. They're risking their life every day to try to get in there, but they won't let them do it. So before we can finish with our orientation session up in Ohio at one of the colleges there, three people go to Mississippi, sort of an advance squad, go down there, and they disappear within the 2 days of being in Mississippi. They are captured. I'm going to use the word captured, you all. They were captured by the sheriff, who take them to a Ku Klux Klan meeting, where they eventually are killed. And the Klan was infiltrated by the FBI, and we now have the FBI records from there. What happened? They killed the two white people first, Swarner and Goodman first. The Klan did, And then the sheriff, the deputy sheriff, who was there at the meeting, he was the one that brought him there. He arrested him and brought him to a Klan meeting. And he says, you done killed the two white ones. All you left for me to kill was this N-word person, black man. And so that just shows you that that they were dealing with some mean people who were set on evil. And they started, that happened before we got there. We were still in Ohio with all these people at the orientation session, at a college there. So we had to tell these young people that three of our people had already been assassinated. We knew it. We knew after we couldn't find them after 3 days, we knew they had been kidnapped. And so we figured they were already dead. So we had to tell these people this. And to their credit, they all came with us anyway, knowing that they were facing imminent danger the moment they crossed that state line to come down there to help us register people to vote. So it was a great moment in the history of our country and a great moment in the history of the Civil Rights Movement. And but Suwanna Goodman and Cheney were sacrificial lambs. They were killed from before they were killed first. And, yes. But that is what really got the nation set on edge. By then, most people realized that the violence we had been talking about, that black people had been living with every day, not only were we exposed to that violence, but white people who tried to help us were exposed to that violence too. So mm-hmm. it's a tragic story that ended in a good result, you all, because at the end of the day, by the end of 1964, Congress was already offering the 64 Voting Rights Act, which not only outlawed the poll tax, it outlawed that literacy test I was talking about, but most importantly, they set federal registrars in the Mississippi to register over 100,000 people to vote that we had tried to register that summer in what we call a mock registration. They took our list and registered all these people to vote. So it was really a wonderful event in the history of the country. People had to sacrifice their life to make it happen. And so we go back down. I'm going back down to this year. We're bringing back about 200 or 300 of these volunteers who were there. I'm 80 years old, and I was one of the younger ones, you all. So you all know some of us are going to be walking with canes and walkers.
Yeah.
And so Frank, we're going to sing some freedom songs and talk about freedom.
Absolutely. Maybe we can get you to jump in next week and just give us a report or some report from Mississippi. And I just also want to mention that Goodman's mom was very much a part of Pacifica Radio and WBAI up until the time when she left. So they're a part of our family. And
yes.
We're glad.
Yeah, his family was in the news business, which is one of the reasons why the word spread so far and wide. Once people realize that these white people have been assassinated down there, you know, they black people disappeared all the time. Mm-hmm. Only we cared about them. We and their family and the black NAACP and SNCC, we cared about them. But the nation didn't care that much about them. But now you got two young white kids who've been murdered. That provides a whole different set on the whole thing, and it really enabled us to get this story before the public in a meaningful way.
Absolutely. Frank Smith, everybody can come out on Wednesday as Thomas Blanton is going to tell us. Thomas Blanton is a member of the PFW family, very active with Juneteenth organizing, and we have just a couple minutes for Thomas to give us a few highlights of what is going on in this city on Wednesday. So good morning, Thomas. Hopefully he can jump on. I'll just mention, as we're waiting for Thomas, that one thing that I wasn't quite aware of until I heard it on a rerun of a show I did years ago is that on Juneteenth, 1970, was the day that Ron Clark founded Rap Incorporated, which Ron Clark was very much a part of the PFW family, gave us a home when we didn't have a home in the beginning, and is part of our history. Here, RAP was a very important organization. Thomas, you
Johnny,
there?
How are you?
Good morning. Tell us what is, give us a couple of highlights of what's happening on Wednesday.
You're supposed to.
And make sure you shut off your phone, because we're hearing an echo from you, so you should not have anything else on except talking right into the Zoom.
Yeah, for some reason I'm getting it on my computer, okay. Johnny.
Okay, well, if you can't turn it off, then...
Yeah, no, I tried it on the phone and the computer.
Okay, so then we can't continue.
What is this?
Okay, so I'm sorry, Thomas. If unless the engineer can help us. But Thomas was going to talk about several key events. And Thomas, we're getting
it's
this.
It's coming off the computer line.
Okay, so Thomas, I'm sorry. We have to leave you. Okay, so Thomas, you have to get off the phone and off the. So we can just say, you can listen when we. Okay, but we're almost out of time. I just want to say that Thomas was going to announce that Wednesday morning, he's part of a two-hour special that will include Frank Smith and will include some announcements about what is happening on Wednesday. So, Thomas, sorry we couldn't bring you on. The caller from Germany can talk for 30 seconds, and then we need to wrap up for the hour.
Is Frank Smith still there?
Yes, he is, but we have very little time, and we hear you, and we're happy you're calling us from Germany. What was your comment or question to Frank?
My question is, do you think that the power of the vote, not only the black vote, but decent white folks, Asians, Jews, immigrants, and Islamics, do you think the power of the vote can make America a more socialist and capitalist hybrid, as is the nation of Germany?
Okay, and Frank has a whole 30 seconds to answer that question. Frank, that would require a couple hours. Okay, Frank is no longer on. Sorry, our friend from Germany, we don't have that kind of time. Of course, voting is one thing, and we will be talking more about voting as we continue into this election year, but it's certainly not the only thing. We have to do a lot of organizing. So we have a few minutes where Mr. Gibbs can wrap up his thoughts for today. And again, you can hear him tomorrow, Tuesday, at the Woodridge Library. I just want to mention, since I have a moment, one other thing that some people may remember happened on Juneteenth. Of course, many things happened on that day, but in 1953, that was the date that there was an execution of the Rosenbergs, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who were accused of being agents for Russia. They were killed right there in New York City, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, June 19th, 1953. So, of course, it's important to know and remember a lot of what happened on this date. But, Mr. Gibbs, you have about 5 minutes to give your final thoughts, or at least three or four.
All right. Thank you. let me share with the audience one of my favorite Juneteenth stories. And it's one that is told by...
Somebody needs to mute their phone. We're getting feedback. And perhaps the engineer could mute everybody other than C.R. Gibbs. Sorry, C.R. Keep...
Oh, no problem. One of my favorite Juneteenth stories is about a wonderful lady named Temple Cummins, who was still a child when the war ended, and she remembered the story that had come down from her mother. And she said she used to hide in the chimney corner and listen to what the white folks say. When freedom was plard, master would tell him, but mother would hear him telling missus that the slaves was free, but they didn't know it, and he not gonna whine to tell him till he makes another crop or two. When mother hear that she say that, she slips out of the chimney corner, it cracks her heels together four times and shouts, "I'm free, I'm free." Then she runs to the field against master's will and told all the slaves, and they quit work. Then she run away, and right in the night, she slip into a big ravine near the house and had them bring her baby, Temple, that's the lady that we get the story from, to bring her to her. Master, he come out with his gun and shot at mother, but she ran down the ravine and gets away with me. I share that with you so that we can know some of the risks that were attendant with trying to be free, even after the declaration of what would lead to the celebration of Juneteenth.
Absolutely. And tell us again, Mr. Gibbs, I think that this discussion that you're going to have tomorrow night at the library, free discussion, it's not on Zoom, it's only in person. And when you talk about Juneteenth, the next frontier, just give us a little glimpse of what you might be sharing.
The principle behind it is simple. What happened the day after Juneteenth? In other words, what was the situation like in the state of Texas in the weeks, months, and years after freedom had been declared? When we get full up on the celebration on that one date, but what was the reality after the celebration? And I'm going to provide some examples and talk about that tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Woodridge Library, not in Woodridge, Virginia, but Woodridge in Northeast DC at 18th and Rhode Island Avenue.
Yes, and we look forward, some of us look forward to seeing you tomorrow. And I just want to say that for those of you who haven't been hearing the announcement, WPFW is dedicating the entire day, Wednesday to Juneteenth. There'll be all kinds of very important programming. And again, Wednesday morning, there will be making sure and some announcements of what is going on Wednesday. I want to mention a few things that I remember. Definitely in Anacostia in Ward 8, there are a lot of things happening all day long, including the 1DC events that are happening throughout the day, as well as at Anacostia Busboys. There's a whole series of discussions, I think, happening from 10 or 11. Perhaps you can call the Anacostia Busboys or listen on Wednesday. I know that Reverend Wilson is giving a talk, and Kimon Freeman is doing a discussion on the crime bill throughout the day at Wednesday at Anacostia Busboys. And of course, there are things going on at the cemetery in Bethesda. But tune in Wednesday morning, and you will hear throughout the day, but I'm sure in the morning they'll give listeners an overview of what is going to be happening. It's quite a lot going on here in D.C. this Wednesday. I want to thank Kalia, our engineer for today. Thank my team members. Chuck, again, thank you for the very inspiring motorcade through the city on Saturday in honor of Black Fathers. Thank you to Jeremiah and Mari for helping. And we give Magic Mike a shout out. And again, a lot going on Wednesday, so stay tuned. And we're going out with one of Frank Smith's and Chuck's favorite songs that is actually relevant to Juneteenth. So here we go with Sweet Honey in the Rock, Sojourner's Truth.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. As we go marching on, we are following Yankee soldiers who enlisted for the war. We are fighting for the union. We are fighting for the Lord. We can shoot a rebel father and a white man ever saw. As we go marching on, look there above the center where the flag is waving bright. We are going out slaving. We are bound for freedom of life. We mean to show Jeff Davis how the Africans can fight. As we go marching on, singing glory.
our calling soldiers, just as sure as you are born. When the rebels hear a shout, they will think it's Gabriel's horn. As we go marching on, they will have to pay us wages, the wages of their sin. They will have to bow their foreheads to their colored kith and kin. They will have to give us households, or the roof will tumble in. As we go marching on, we're singing glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. As we go marching on, we be as the proclamation. Rebels, hush it as you will. Then the birds will sing it to us.
The Pacifica National Board and the WPFW Local Station Board will be voting on a proposed Pacifica Bylaws Amendment between July 10th and August 24th of 2024. Information on the amendment, about how vacancies are filled on local station boards, and about the process will be posted on the pacifica.org website.
Very often, Juneteenth is presented as a story of news of the Emancipation Proclamation traveling slowly to the Deep South in Texas. But it was really a story of power traveling slowly and of freedom being seized. On Wednesday, June 19th, WPFW presents Emancipated Spirits, Slavery, Freedom, and Resistance from 5 a.m. until midnight. Through discussions, music, and spoken word, we will interrogate the history of that day, the true meaning of freedom, and the role resistance continues to play in securing liberation. That's Emancipated Spirits, Slavery, Freedom, and Resistance, Wednesday, June 19th, 5 a.m. until midnight, on WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
Hi, this is Robin Holden. On Sunday, July 7th, from 4 until 8 p.m., WPFW is presenting a fundraising evening of roots, rock, and reggae at Mango Cafe, 4719 Annapolis Road in Blaytonsburg, Maryland, featuring the Proverbs Reggae Band with Z Lion and special guests Freedom and Saroma Lee L. Proceeds to benefit WPFW. Details, WPFWFM.org.
Thank you to the following for providing food for our phone volunteers during our spring membership drive. Sabu Hakim, Vicino's Restaurant Italiano, Crown Caribbean Bakery, Lamont's Entertainment Complex. Thank you for supporting WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
Oh, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's